Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Spiritual Month, with my father, John Butcher, on the phone. How you doing, man?
Good, Jordan. How are you, man?
I am fantastic. I hear some birds chirping in the background. Sounds serene. Are you out there on the beach?
We're not on the beach, but we're looking at it.
I love it, man. I love it. Got to be pretty tranquil out there, I'd imagine. Listen, I would love to dive into spirituality and, you know, do some of our big thoughts like we usually do, but these questions are so strong and they're so deep. I think we should probably just jump right into the questions. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, that sounds great. Sounds great, Jordan.
Okay, let's do it. First question coming from Joanna. John, do you have a specific technique that you consider helpful during meditation to quiet your monkey mind?
Well, that's a great question. And yeah, I have come across a few techniques over the last few years that have really helped. The first one is that Missy and I took TM lessons, Transcendental Meditation lessons. We actually, like, you can call the David Lynch Institute and they'll send someone. I was like $1,000, $995. And they came to our house and gave us a couple days of lessons. And that really helped. I also think that you can get some good YouTube videos. It's not hard. It's super easy, but you do need instructions. And boy, was that a nice little fast track, Jordan, because Miss and I have just never really been able to, over the, you know, 30 years we've been together almost, we just never have been able to get into a steady rhythm of meditation. Mm. And TM was the first time that we really were able to kind of drop into a nice steady rhythm. We're not doing it so much anymore, but it's there available to us anytime we want because we know how to do it. We've moved on to a couple other meditation techniques, which I'll talk about right now. It's highly effective for me to get into nature, to quiet my monkey mind. There's just something that happens when, you know, you step into just the beautiful world around us, separate from our screens and all of our, you know, demands on us and all of our stress, and just get into nature and feel your place on this planet and absorb the sunlight and listen to the birds. It just automatically does something to you that puts you in a spiritual state, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's something I really, if I could just interject my personal experience here, something that I've come across recently, is kind of a big revelation, was I'm kind of an input addict. There's a lot of you Lifebookers that can identify with this. I want to be reading. I want to be listening to a podcast constantly. And I was like, well, that kind of goes against this whole idea of quieting your mind and meditating. I realized that if you go on a walk in nature with nothing, there's actually a ton of input. You're never in silence. Actually dial in and get into that meditative state, there's the crickets going and the birds and you feel the sun on your skin and you hear the cars and there's a ton of input. It's just a low grade input, even just the humming frequency of the earth.
Well, 100%. And I'll tell you where we really realized that, Jordan, was when we did our vision quest last summer with Justin. So Justin had just turned 14 and me and Missy and him all did a vision quest simultaneously. We were in different places alone in the mountains in the forest of Basque country on the border of France and Spain.
Jeez.
About 2 miles apart, so we were separate for 4 nights and 5 days with no food and no input other than nature. And it was absolutely transformative, especially for Justin. It changed his life to be off of his screens for 5 days with no input of any kind other than nature. And Justin actually had a couple problems. His tent didn't work, and the first 2 nights were severe thunderstorms. So he had some challenges over and above that to get over. But that was a completely life transforming experience because it basically showed us the richness of that input that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. The earth will heal you. The earth will nurture you. The earth will give you all the answers you need if you just listen. But we don't listen anymore in the modern world. We're just so disconnected from nature, especially kids. This is one of the biggest problems we have on this planet. So that's number two. Number one for us was TM lessons. That really helped us figure out how to meditate, or at least one technique to meditate, you know, correctly and well. The second was we get into nature as much as we can. Now it's easy when we're living here on Hawaii. The third, and this is the kind of big new one, is the guided meditations from like Dr. Joe Dispenza has, you know, otherworldly guided meditations. Solvana, which is mm-hmm. Mind Valley's sister company, mm-hmm. run by Clemen, that whole company exists to distribute guided meditations. So check out Solvana, and specifically Manesh Ibar, who is our family spiritual advisor, and he does a couple of great meditations on Solvana. He's releasing a program called Clairescence. And Clairescence, it may even be available now. If you Google search it, you might be able to order this program. It's basically 12 guided meditations that give you literally spiritual tools that you can use. He has an instructional video before each meditation, and then he takes you through 12 meditations that just gives you this sort of arsenal of spiritual tools that you can use, like a tool for grounding. You just do this visualization where you create this green ball of energy inside of you, then you drop it into the center of the earth, and it just grounds you, and you can feel it. And a tool for sort of opening up the portal so that you can receive the energy of the universe. It's these sort of spiritual tools that can be really, really effective, especially for people starting out. So that's kind of those are the techniques we've been using lately. And here's the good news. Once you learn how to quiet your mind, once you learn how to empty it, you can do that on demand. And I know how to do that now. So I learned it from TM. I've spent time in nature. I've done these beautiful guided meditations. So anytime I'm feeling stressed or anytime I have a moment that I just want to empty my mind and just be, I can do that on demand. Mm-hmm. The trick is to maintain it, right? To maintain that emptiness, which is more easily said than done. But at least I've learned to do that. And that's a big positive change in my life over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. And incredible stuff going on with Clemen and Solvana. Make sure to check the podcast episode that we did with him. His story is incredible. And he is an amazing individual. Just hearing him speak is amazing.
Clemen is awesome. And I'll tell you what we talked about yesterday. I spent some time with Clemen yesterday, and we talked about doing a series of life book meditations, one for each category, guided visual imagery that just connects you with your deepest self relative to your health and fitness or your love relationship or your financial life. I think we're going to do 12 guided meditations for life book members to really help them move toward their very best life. I think that's a great idea.
That's awesome. That is a fantastic idea. I look forward to that a lot. I love Clemen because he addresses the listener as dear listener. That's all I needed to when we did the interview. Listen to me, dear listener. I have the answer for you. I'm like, I love this guy.
Yeah,
I'm all in.
For sure.
Yeah, I look forward to that. And good luck to you, Joanna. Good luck. Next question coming from Jen. I believe the world is undergoing a spiritual transformation right now, despite outward appearances that things are falling apart. Do you agree? How are you and Missy managing the increasingly powerful shifts in energy? And do you have any tips to stay positive and elevated in the midst of what feels like a cultural crisis? Almost made it through that amazing question, Jen.
That's a great question, Jen. Yes, I think that the world is undergoing a spiritual transformation and a spiritual crisis right now, all at the same time. It's a really wild time that we're in, Jordan. It's an unprecedented time in human history, and I can say that as a student of history. Miss and I feel a big schism coming. Mm. It feels like half the human race is going in one direction and the other half is going in the other direction. If you just imagine, universal basic income, where everybody has a basic income to survive, plus virtual reality. You basically got the Wall-E world, right? The world that was shown to you in Wall-E. Or there's that, what was that movie that just came out a couple of years ago about
Ready Player One. Yeah.
Right? So universal basic income plus virtual reality could take half the human race. Like, take them. They're gone. They're not humans on this planet anymore. They're experiencing a completely different reality. It's just impossible to know what's going to happen. We're headed toward the singularity, which Ray Kurzweil talks about, which is, between 2030 and 2040, basically, we're going to hit a time when our computers are so much smarter than us that we can't even predict what that world will be like. It's like he uses the term singularity because that's a physics term for when you go over the event horizon of a black hole and end up in the singularity. The rules of physics are off. You can't even imagine what that world's like. But what we do know is none of our laws that apply in this physical world apply there. And that's the same thing that's going to happen to the human race. And unfortunately, we're in a bad place right now. We're in a bad place because of social media. We didn't handle it very well. At least we haven't handled the beginnings of it very well. It's only 10 years old. And what social media has done is it's hooked us all up. And that has positives and negatives. The negative is that it's never been possible for people with vastly differing opinions that live in geographical locations that are separate from each other to have direct contact ever before in the history of the human race. It's never been possible for a Christian in Alabama to talk to a Muslim in Tehran directly. What are you going to do? Write a letter and look at it and put a stamp. You don't even know that person. You don't even know that person exists.
Yeah.
Or a racist in the north to talk to a racist in the south. Or right?
Yeah. How about this one? To directly tweet the leader of the free world and have him block you.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
That's an insane proposition.
This connection has obviously had major positives, but we're not handling it very well overall. Miss and I feel that the biggest problem that we're facing right now, at least in America and probably in the world, but definitely in America, is the polarization between the right and the left. And the reason that we see that as the biggest problem is because every other issue can fit inside of that. Racism, sexism, all the other issues that we experience can pretty much fit inside of that. And we also feel like this, and this may sound cryptic and negative, but it's the truth. We don't think that there's any way through it. We don't believe that you can solve the hate by working your way through it and trying to unwind it. What Buddha said is you've just got to walk away from it. You can't untangle it. And when you add all of the different ways that we are now, hating each other, there's six of them specifically. When you layer those all on top of each other, there is no way to untangle it. There is no way to work your way through it. There's no talking to the other side. Doesn't matter which side you're on. You can't talk to the other side and convince them of anything. They'll never convince you of anything. When you understand how people form their moral structure
and beliefs,
psychologically,
yeah.
which is revealed in the book The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt, changed my life to understand how conservatives and liberals formulate their morality and what the differences are between the two. You'll understand that you can't unwind it. You can't make your way through it. You've simply got to figure out a way to transcend it, to walk away from it, to take it out of play. You cannot solve it. And that's how we feel right now. And I believe that that's what we're going to be spending the next big chunk of our life on, is this question of how do we, as a species, make our way to a better place and leave these problems behind. That's our next big project. It's been coming in. I've talked to the VIPs about this for months. It's been coming in for a long time, and I'm getting a little bit closer to it. And I'll be sharing, tidbits over the next, between now and the end of the year. I'm real excited about that. But I'm not sharing it with anybody but Lifebook members, because it's too much.
Wow.
The world's not ready for this yet.
That's powerful stuff, man. Powerful stuff. I hope that helped, Jen. Good luck to you. Next question, coming from Eric. I'm struggling with my spirituality right now. I was raised in an extremely strict Christian family and have spent the past few years unraveling all the dogma within myself, specifically surrounding sexuality, sinful nature, and fear. I do think I believe in God, but I've been so resistant to the ideologies of my past that it's hard to discern what's real and what's programmed. Do you have any experience with this? Do you have any tips for exploring spirituality or even religion from a new perspective and finding a genuine personal connection to God?
I have direct experience with that, because that's exactly the same story that happened to me.
I was just going to say, your past was very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was raised with a particularly shame-based, very negative version of Christianity. I guess that we were raised Southern Baptist, which is one of the more strict Protestant Christian sects, and it was not a good experience for me, and I rejected it completely. Before I did, though, when I was in high school, I was a junior and a senior. I read the Bible from cover to cover twice. I read the Quran. I read the Book of Buddha. I started the Book of Mormon, but I just couldn't get through that one. So I really studied, and I know the differences between Islam and Christianity, because I studied that. I studied as much as I could. And basically, at the end of the day, those philosophies at that time in my life were simply not for me. They were profoundly inadequate to describe life on earth, in my opinion, and I had to walk away from organized religion. I went from there to Ayn Rand's work, to objectivism, which is basically a particular brand of atheism. And by atheism, what I mean by atheism is super simple. All it means is, atheist means without God, but what that word meant to me all of my life, which I would have considered myself an atheist, was I simply don't adhere to any organized religion. That's all. Mm. I can recognize the beauty and wisdom in all religions, but I don't believe any of them adequately explain where we came from. And I also don't believe that any of them adequately lay out a moral structure that I'm interested in living by. They all attempt to do that, and they all have their hits and misses as far as I'm concerned. And so that's kind of where I was. Mm-hmm. I'm just now, by the way, returning back to spiritual studies, and just recently came back around to seeing immense value in organized religion. Mm-hmm. Immense value. But the number one distinction that I would make, and what I would absolutely suggest to Eric, separate religion from spirituality. That is the very first step. When you've got those two things combined, it's almost impossible. It's too complicated to try to work through. Spirituality is a deeply personal experience. Religion is a set of rules and dogmas and rituals and hierarchies that play very important roles in society. Mm-hmm. But the two things are very different. And by the way, Jordan, here's something that just dawned on me over the last couple weeks. Science and religion, which are looking more and more similar every year,
right.
As scientists go deeper into the quantum field, it looks more and more like spirituality, right?
Right.
Those two things are looking more and more similar. And one of the things that I realized, because science became my religion for quite a few years, and that's no longer the case either. I consider both of them very valuable structures that can help you in a lot of ways, but they're also both full of dogmas and you know, things that aren't necessarily helpful. But I realized something they have in common, Jordan. Neither system even tries to explain the miracle of creation, meaning something coming from absolute nothing. With religion, and so in other words, they both start out with the same premise, which is both science and religion give me one big miracle for free, one big freebie, and I'll explain the rest of the universe to you. So for science, it's give me the Big Bang. We have no idea how the universe sprang into existence from nothing. First there was a void, and then there was everything. But we'll tell you what happened starting from 1/1,000,000 of 1 second after that Big Bang, and we'll explain the entire universe all the way up to evolution and the modern world. But you got to give us that first miracle for free, because we can't understand anything about it or before that. Same exact thing with the religions, like Christianity. Well, of course, God created the heavens and the earth, but that doesn't explain creation, because that doesn't explain from nothing to something. The existence of God is the real mystery. That's the freebie that they need. So give them the existence of God as the free miracle, and they can explain all the rest of creation after that, based on that trust of a free miracle.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's a good point. But isn't that
interesting?
I think you also always have to start somewhere as well. That's almost like the divining rod for the next step in finding the truth. It's like, just give me that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west every day. Like, that was a miracle at a certain point. You know what I mean?
True. No, you do have to start somewhere, and that's where they both start. So, you know, what I would do is I would separate religion from spirituality and decide which one you want to study, because they're vastly different topics of study. If you want to study religion, you're going to be studying history. You're going to be studying ideology and dogma and rituals and all that human stuff that we needed to get us to where we were. If you're going to be studying spirituality these days, you're going to be exploring the quantum field. You're going to be exploring meditation. You're going to be, and I'll tell you what, the best friggin' resource in the world is YouTube. You can master anything on YouTube these days. I mean, my daughter's become a master of makeup. She's become a master of baking. I listen to all my history shows. I study philosophy. You can learn how to do anything. So decide what you want to study and study it, because there's immense knowledge out there. The whole sum of our knowledge as a species is being organized on YouTube right now. But the distinction between religion and spirituality is the place that I would start, and then go down whichever road is most interesting to you.
Mm-hmm. And your experience personally, make sure to check out Lion Goodman's Spiritual Belief Clearing. He deals with the importance of experiencing God directly. And I think that's probably something that could help you, Eric. So please stay tuned, and good luck to you, seriously.
Sounds good.
Next listener, Rita, writes in with the question, I'm just curious what your personal beliefs are about God and the divine. I know you and Missy are very spiritual people. I can feel that. But how would you describe yourself spiritually, religious or not, agnostic or not? If this is too personal, I understand. It's never too personal, right?
No, it's not too personal, but I'll tell you, those to me, I mean, if Rita's asking what label would I put on us, I don't know the answer to that question, because we're just now starting down this path of really sort of deeply going into spirituality. We're infants in this world, and we're really, really excited about the exploration. I don't have any particular label that comes to mind that I would put on us right now. We're definitely not religious when it comes to, you know, organized religion. We're very open. We have a deep reverence for science. And we're just really now, I'm reading some ancient texts. That's what I've gotten really interested in lately, are what are the texts underlying both religion and science? And man, are there some interesting things out there. Mm. So, you know, we're young at this, and we're new at this, and we're really excited about this exploration. And I don't want to put any labels on this right now.
Rita, if you think this is getting personal, just wait for Love Relationship Month. You better buckle up, man. And it's interesting because we come from a world that was more a multi-deity world, you know, for the longest time. It was like, do you believe in God? The answer might be, well, which God?
Mm-hmm.
And then we all kind of joined up in our little clubs. And now in 2019, it's interesting. We're kind of blending again in a way. Do you think that's a fair statement?
Oh, 100%. I think that's absolutely right.
Not the same way, in the sense that all of the deities are true and they're separate, but it's a different kind of blending.
Yeah, I agree with that, Jordan. And it can't help but go that way.
Right.
The internet makes it so that no matter where you live, as long as you have access to the internet, which not everybody does, you're more homogeneous than, you know.
Yeah. Culturally, religiously, all that stuff. Just, you're right.
It's all kind of coming together and blending. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's got a Lakers jersey now. I love it. good luck, Rita. Next question coming from Catherine. What do you believe is the greatest thing we can do as individuals to support the collective evolution of humanity at this time? In what tangible ways can we be the change?
Catherine, that's a phenomenal question. And I wish more people would ask that question. And this is the question that Missy and I are going to be deeply exploring in the next few years. This is our mission, and it is our spiritual purpose. And my answer to that, what is the greatest thing we can do as individuals, is the most important thing you can do is attend to yourself.
Mm.
Make yourself the best person you can be. Live consciously, live morally, according to your own standards and values. Be self-responsible. If everyone did this, we wouldn't have any problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Literally, if everyone did this, we wouldn't have the problems we have. Buddha said, it's more valuable to see one fault in yourself than 1,000 faults in others.
Oh, I love that.
You know, we have a world of people demanding change out there, marching on the streets, demanding change, pointing their fingers at everybody. Yeah, but nobody wants to change themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's our problem. And so I believe that our primary responsibility is to do the best we can with what we've been given, whatever that is, whatever it is. Play the hand you were dealt like it was the hand you wanted,
mm-hmm.
whatever that hand is. And if you have the good fortune of getting your own act together, which most people never will, they're going to need to be carried. They're going to need to be hauled along because they can't take care of themselves. If you can get responsible for yourself and turn yourself into the best person you can be, then you'll have the good fortune of being able to help the people around you. Mm. Now, that is an enviable position that most people will never experience. They truly make a difference in the lives of others, but it all starts with you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the most important things that Missy and I have realized over the last 20 years of working with the Lifebook methodology is that there is no one right answer for all 7 billion people on this planet in any form of human endeavor, in any area of life. There's no one right love relationship strategy because we've all got different visions. We've all got different equipment. We've all got different desires. There's no one right financial strategy because we've all got different talents. We've all got different opportunities and challenges. There's no one right health and fitness strategy because we've all got different bodies. There is no one size fits all solution to any area of life. And the biggest problem we've got in this world right now, or at least in our country, which basically affects the world more than any other country times a million, 80% of all entertainment on this planet comes from America. We control the culture of this world in a lot of ways. And the biggest problem we have in our country right now is the notion that my way is the one right way for everybody. And if you're not down with my program, there's going to be trouble. Yeah. That everyone feels that way. My views on this, my views on that. And I'm going to go out there and march in the streets. And I'm going to slam you on social media. And I'm going to wreck your life if you're not down with my program.
Yeah.
You know, that's the issue.
Unfortunately, that's a platform that wins though. And that's why I think that what you're saying is so profound, talking about personal responsibility and working on yourself. But can you imagine a political campaign on that? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to run for president. I'm going to fix the healthcare problem by making you guys do more sit-ups and push-ups. You would never get elected on that campaign. You know what I'm trying to say here? Like,
totally.
Unfortunately, that's not how the Lifebookers are a special breed of people, man. They're the type of people who are willing to do the work because listen, there's a lot of things you can do to not help the situation, Catherine. Okay, so you can ask my dad for some really great advice on how to be a great person, and he'll have some great answers on how to make great change. I'll tell you some things not to do. Don't make more angry tweets. That doesn't help. That doesn't help anything. Don't moralize on anyone. Don't do the things that everyone's already doing that isn't working. You know what I'm saying? Like, there has to be a change in course here, because like you said, popular vote isn't exactly turning out so well.
No, but I'll tell you what, Jordan, and you know what, I'm just going to share a little bit more than I was planning to share, because these are Lifebook VIPs, and you know, I feel like this is what I've been thinking about for the last 2 years, and it's been coming slow, but it has been coming, because we've been contemplating a strategy which is extremely hardcore. We've been pondering this, which could truly wipe out the big six problems that we're having, which are racism, sexism, gender issues, or I should say sexual preference issues, class warfare, religious intolerance, and right versus left, deep political polarization. Those are our issues. And we've been shown a technique that can wipe them out in one step. And I'm not quite ready to talk about it yet. The world's not ready for it, but Lifebook members might be. And I'm not organized yet, but I'll share the basic idea. You want to hear it, Jordan?
Absolutely.
Okay. Here's the basic idea. If you take a look at human history for the last 5 to 10,000 years, the three big existential threats were famine, which wiped out famine just wiped out hundreds of millions of people in history. Pestilence, same thing, hundreds of millions of people. And nonstop war everywhere on the globe. We've solved those three problems substantially. The problem still exists. We still have, you know, our little, you know, measles outbreaks every now and then. But I'm talking about half the population of England died in 4 years in the 1300s because of the bubonic plague. We've never seen anything like that since. Well, there was the last massive outbreak on that scale was in the 20s when there was the Spanish influenza after World War I. We've wiped out famine and we've wiped out pestilence as the force it used to be. And we've wiped out war nonstop every place on the globe.
As history has known it. Yeah. Nations going to war, 3% of the world dying. It just doesn't exist in near the same way that it used to.
No, correct. Now, the 20th century was the bloodiest century in the world by far, mainly because of four events, World War I, World War II, and the two big communist purges, Stalin and Mao. You know, basically 200 million people died because of those four things. And so the 20th century was was the worst century in history when you take a look at the numbers. But we're at a place right now where we've got this small window of opportunity where we've literally eliminated those threats. But what we've done is replaced them with these other six, with racism and sexism and class warfare, religious intolerance and political polarization. But here's the thing about these issues versus the old existential threats. These issues are mental. These issues are mental. They're in our heads. Racism exists in our heads. It's not, you know, it's not out there in the world anymore in the sense that there's no more whites-only fountains. There's no more. You don't see it on the street. It exists in people's heads. Mm-hmm. All of these mm-hmm. do, which means that the solution has to be in people's heads. It's an individual mental solution. It's a switch that you can flip. And racism ends when we say it ends, when we decide it ends, when we make a commitment that we're not doing that anymore. We're not giving it any more energy. We're literally not going to run that program. We're not going to run the sexism program. We're not going to run the racism program. We're not going to run the sexual preference program. We're not going to run the political intolerance program. We're literally going to be a group of people that walk away from all that and leave it alone and put our energy elsewhere. So, and I've been working, and here's what's required to do that, which is what I've been working on. Because I've got my political convictions, I've got my opinions on all these issues, and what I've been trying to do for the last year is separate my own self-righteous, moral, judgmental positions from my higher self. So I've got to literally work through. I can still vote the way I vote, right? Mm-hmm. I still believe politically in the issues that I believe in. But I'm not going to wake up every day and put energy into those things anymore. I'm going to actually help actual people. If I feel strongly about helping the African-American community, instead of going out there on marches, I'm going to literally try to figure out how to get Lifebook into the inner cities like Chicago and Detroit. And I've been doing that. If I care about women's issues, instead of going out there and pointing my finger and shouting and burning shit down and walking around with a sign, I'm going to actually figure out how to help empower actual women. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be part of the solution. I'm no longer going to put any energy into any of those problems. They've got to be solved in my own mind first, and I'm still working on that. But once I'm able to flip that switch and say, it's over. These problems no longer exist in my psyche. I am no longer going to give them any energy. Instead, I'm putting my energy over here into being the solution. Well, the bottom line is this. Enough people do that. It is over. Mm-hmm. It's over when we say it's over. And that's the only way it will ever be over. Mm-hmm. You cannot legislate it away. You cannot argue it away. You cannot debate it away. You've literally got to decide in your own mind that it's over from your perspective. You're done with it. I'm done. I'm walking away. I'm walking away over here to this group of people that's actually trying to help
and
people
in
the
world. Positivity.
Not by pointing fingers and knocking shit over, but by being the best people that they can be and then shining their light of love on the people around them. That's what I think the answer is. And that was I shared that a hell of a lot earlier than I wanted to share it. It's rough around the edges, but that's what Miss and I are developing right now. And
I love it, man.
And when we're ready, we're going to talk to the Lifebookers about it. And then we're going to ask them, what do you want to do with this?
That's really, really cool, man. I think it's high time for that because people have so much fervor and they have so much energy, but they need a blueprint or they need some sort of guidance. And the last thing you want to do is run your life on the cycle where you think you're making a difference or you think you're part of something bigger. But the cold, hard truth is no one is being helped because of all your actions.
And that's exactly what's happening right now. And it's because of two things, the two big hurdles, Jordan, that people have to, and I'm one of these people. I can tell you this right now, the two giant hurdles that it's going to take to get across the bridge to this friggin' nirvana that I'm talking about, to this promised land where racism and sexism literally don't exist because we've wiped them out of our psyches. And now we're focused on something else. And that's all positive. The two big hurdles are the following. Self-righteous moral indignation. You're going to have to give that up. I'm literally going to have to stop feeling like I'm the one that understands morality. And the people that disagree with me are somehow not moral. It's the whole deplorables concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways that you can do that is by understanding how we form moral constructs, understanding what the morality of the left is and what the morality of the right is. We have different brains that form morality in different ways. And we need to respect each other's, we need to respect each other's positions. That's it. We need to release our self-righteous moral judgment. And that's me. And that's a lot of people I know. Right. And then the second thing is the victim mentality. I don't have that. Mm. A lot of people in the left community don't.
No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I don't have victim mentality. And
you know the thing about the victim mentality, though, is it's sneaky. You can have it in one little spot. You can be this, totally. You know what I mean? It'll get you.
100%. Yep, 100%. But, you know, those two things, self-righteous moral indignation and victim mentality, are so hard to release because they become part of your identity. As a matter of fact, they become the key drivers of your identity. If you've been taught all your life that you're a victim, just because of the melatonin level of your skin or the genitals between your legs, if that's been pounded into your head all of your life, it becomes your identity, and that's hard to release, right?
Yeah, and it can be very problematic. Just ask, you know, Lyon Goodman, a belief expert. That can get ugly down the road, 40 years down the road.
Absolutely. And so so those are the two big hurdles that we've got to get over in order to enter this promised land where we can live a life, at least as a community. I don't care if it's 100 people. Give me 100 people that want to form an online community where we literally have eliminated these six problems. They don't exist in our little circle. And by the way, any of you out there who are willing to do the same thing that we've done can enter this little circle. And the circle gets bigger and bigger, and it's wiped out inside of there. These are mental problems that we've let go of inside of this little community. And then our job is to invite others who are like-minded to consider joining us. We're not going to hit anyone over the head. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go on a moral crusade. We're not going to be do-gooders in this, you know, or missionaries, because do-gooders mess the world up and always have. Confucius said it. Alan Watts has this great line. Listen to this. He has this great line about do-gooders. You know, he's like, "Let me help you or you shall drown," said the monkey, putting the fish safely up the tree.
Wow, that's genius.
Well, this is what happens when missionaries go spread their stuff to, you know, I'm sitting here on Hawaii right now, one of the most idyllic cultures in the history of the world. You got missionaries coming here. And, well, I'm not sure they're better off before or after.
Right.
You know?
I know what you mean.
These are the questions. Yeah. So I'm not interested in being a missionary. I'm not interested in being a do-gooder. I'm not interested in trying to change other people's minds. I'm interested in being the best person I can be myself. And then if I can make that happen, I'll be able to shine some love on people around me. And it's just simply an invitation to take a look. If it resonates with you, man, would we love to have you join us, because we need all the help over here we can
get. Yeah, that's great. And that's what you get when you ask the best. You know, what should I do? How can I make change? Be the best you can be, man. That's basically the answer you just gave in a much deeper, more comprehensive fashion. But I think being the best person you can be is probably the short form answer of it.
I agree 100% with that. And part of that, if you really want to explore something that's difficult and that could actually be, you know, life-changing and world-changing, can we become the best we can be and let go of the psychological problems that are just have beset the human race and are threatening to tear us apart so bad that we may never be able to put it together again. Mm-hmm.
Whew, powerful stuff. Hope that helps, Catherine. Next question coming from Jess. How would you define a mystical experience, and why do you think firsthand spiritual experiences are so important? What impact have your own mystical experiences had on your spirituality?
Well, I guess mystical experiences would probably be defined as sort of, you know, out of the ordinary enough that they really stand out, something that you don't just encounter, you know, in everyday life very often. That would be my definition just off the top of my head. And I think that they're important because they show you that there's something more here, that there's something deeper going on than we just can sense with our everyday senses. Mm-hmm. But we can actually access those other states of beings or those other planes of existence. I've had some experiences that I have no way of explaining, you know, in, I guess, normal terms, that I would consider sort of out of the ordinary.
I would love for you, I don't want to jump in here, but I would love for you to talk about your spirit quest out there in Basque Country. And I know you had like crazy experiences with animals and stuff. I don't want to load your question. Please share what you want to share, but I thought I'd prime that up for the listeners.
Yeah, you know, I had some, and by the way, everybody that ever goes on a vision quest like this will report the exact same thing. These things are, there are some things that deliver consistent experiences, and even though they seem mystical or supernatural, if that happens consistently, you can kind of know that you're onto something. That's in a way objective data, right? when they repeatedly come up, you know. Yeah, I had some amazing experiences with animals and some deeply spiritual experiences. I had one time I was at dinner with Jade and Justin and Miss in Southeast Asia, and we were playing rock, paper, scissors. And I somehow locked into Jade's head. She was probably 6 years old. And Jordan, we played that game. And I beat her 13 straight times, which should be statistically impossible. The odds of that happening are probably 1 billion to 1. 13 straight times, but I was locked into her head and I could absolutely see what she was going to do. It's only happened once. It's never happened again, but that happened, you know? And so I've had some experiences like that. And it's like, I have no explanation for where that came from, or, you know, all I know is that it did actually happen. And what's wonderful about experiences like that is they're curious, they're mysterious, they keep life super interesting. They just show you there's more here than meets the eye. Mm-hmm. And that can be accessed. Some people really know how to access that well. That's why we're working with Manesh as our spiritual advisor as we move into this new world. We want some good guidance. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And I think that's just good advice no matter what category you're trying to improve.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I can't let the subject go, man. Tell us about the time you were like sick and dying, and those wild horses came up to you. Can you share that with the listeners?
Sure. Well, let me share this. This is what happened. This is what happened before I was. It was the first day on my vision quest, and Manesh put me right next to a mountain ridge that went up, up, up. It was a super sharp ridge, and it ended up on the highest point of the mountain there in Basque Country. And he put me there specifically because he knew I would go up. I would have to go up at some point. So I decided to go up, and I'm afraid of heights. I'm not super afraid of heights, but my knees get a little shaky when I'm by any kind of a big edge. I'm just not super comfortable with heights. I never have been. So going up that mountain was scary for me. And it got scarier and scarier as I got higher. It got more and more narrow. There's like death on one side, death on the other side. And I'm walking on this little 1 foot friggin' ledge. And every time I clear like a new height, I'm like, oh my God, there's two more up there so I kept seeing more that it was farther and farther. So I'm going up this mountain, and all of a sudden, right in the middle of the 1 foot path is a perfect eagle feather. It's 2 feet long. It's like a perfect, Manesh called it a finger. It's one of the great eagle feathers. And feathers are hard to find in general, and eagle feathers are especially hard to find. And there it is lying straight across my path. And I said to myself, that was amazing. I was like, thank you for this. It's beautiful, but I'm not going to take it unless I make it all the way up here. So I took it and I stuck it in the ground right there on the path. And I said, if I make it to the top of this mountain, I'm going to take that feather. But if I don't make it, I'm not taking that feather. I got to earn it. So I kept going, and I kept getting more and more afraid. But the bottom line is I made it all the way to the top, and I was so friggin' proud of myself. I was like, I got there up to the top, and there was this little grassy, about the size of a bedroom, maybe two bedrooms, a little sort of a grassy knoll up on top, just a little pad up there, where you could see the entire Basque Country, all the way into Spain, all the way into France, all the mountains around. And I was kind of like celebrating. I got up there, and for the first minute, I was like, yes, I made it. Like I was like fist pumping and shit. And all of a sudden, right next to me, not more than 8 feet away, a bald eagle, or I don't know if it was a bald eagle, a giant freaking eagle just rose. Whoa. Right next to me. I could almost reach out and touch it. And I was frozen and shocked, and it was so beautiful. It didn't fly, it rose on the current. You know how they do that? And it just rose right next to me, and then it started slowly flying off, and another one rose.
Whoa.
And another one rose. Five eagles, big, beautiful, full-grown eagles right next to me, and they all just, it was just so amazing, Jordan. They flew off into the distance, and I was just flabbergasted. I was shocked. So needless to say, on my way back down, I took my feather and I got super sick the next day, and I was sick up there for like two, maybe three straight days, violently ill. And it was not anything I ate, and it was not any virus. There was something energetic coming out of me.
Always seems to happen on those trips.
And I realized is that the earth will heal you. If you lay down on the earth, and that's what we did for four straight days. We laid down on the earth, and the earth basically purged me. Whatever was inside of me, it got complete. I vomited for like, you know, almost dry heaves for like two, three straight days. And that came out of me, whatever it was.
Wow.
I don't even know what it was, but I felt completely different after that experience. Justin totally transformed. Missy got sick at the same time I did, which was super weird. We all had just a completely magical experience. And Jordan, you know, after 25 years of studying and doing the life book methodology and really seeking to learn how to master living as a human being in this physical world. That's what Miss and I dedicated our lives to. The 12 categories of life that we would have to master in order to become our very best selves and have the best experience we could on this planet. And now at our age to have discovered what almost feels like a new continent to explore with new rules, but it's hard to describe because
it's like the mirror world in Zelda. Everything's a little bit different.
Yes.
A lot of the universal laws still operate, but much of it is completely.
Yeah, you get to pull a lot of that stuff forward.
Yeah, but right? A lot of it is completely different and often opposite.
But a lot of it's completely different. So, you know, all the work that we did is still 100% valid. It's just that we've gotten a new expanded sense of the universe and our place in it. And we're so excited to be able to explore this mysterious, wonderful, unbelievably powerful new world. It's a gift, and we treasure it, and we're really looking forward to being with the Life Book community as we do this exploration. There's a lot of people in the Life Book community that are farther along than us, and we're going to share everything we learn just like we always have. So we're super excited about it, man, and feel very, very grateful.
And just to kind of wrap it up here, you were just saying, you know, it's all about mastering these 12 categories and a large degree of control. As you're kind of deepening your spiritual journey, are you finding out more about letting go, surrendering control, letting go of the expectations of mastery, things like that?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. It's the dance between intention and allowing. I mean, we're here to do a job. We're not here to just be waifs on the wind wherever the tide of life happens to take us. Unless that's our, you know, if you read the book, The Surrender Experiment, that's kind of the approach that guy had. You know, so I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, my way is the right way for sure. We've all got differences. In my world, what we're really exploring is the relationship between intention and allowing. So I believe that nature expects us to do our part. The universe is not going to hand us a 12 category smart life. We've got to do our part, and yet we don't have to do it alone. The universe is a benevolent place that is more than willing to not only help us, but to unfold blessings that we couldn't even friggin' imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that dance between intention and allowing that Miss and I are really exploring right now. And you guys, we're going to share what we discover with you, because I believe that there are going to be some big, big realizations and some profound new strategies and discoveries over the next few months that are really going to move the needle in our lives.
Can't wait
to share that with you. And so grateful to have all of you by our side.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I feel like that just about wraps it up, unless there's anything you want to add here before we close out the episode.
No, man, that's good stuff. I've enjoyed the conversation.
I just want to congratulate you, man, because, you know, I'm still kind of in my building phases of my life. My spiritual category is not my strongest, and I've observed you over the last decade completely transform in this category.
Yeah.
And definitely a great role model and a shining example to me.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that.
It's just been really great to see you evolve.
Jordan, I appreciate that, man. And I'll tell you what, I really am grateful for you and for you saying that. And you know, Solomon said, for everything there is a season, and you are in your building years. Now is the time. And you know, Manesh was here, and we just spent time with Manesh. Manesh is 10 years younger than me, and he's like, John, I'm still in my building years too. I'm ready to pull out my sabers.
Right.
Done right now. And, you know, Miss and I are just kind of getting through that time in our lives, and we're really ready to start exploring something completely new and different. But you are on exactly the track that you should be. And when and if it becomes time to pivot, you'll know it.
That's awesome. Thank you, man. Thank you for those wise words.
Thank you.
Everybody out there, thank you for listening. We're wrapping it up here. Love you all.
Love you guys. Love you, Joe.
Yeah, man. Love all you listeners. Stay tuned. Send us your questions every month for each category. We love answering them. This is John Butcher and Jordan River signing off for the Lifebook Member Podcast, saying thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Podcast.